There's an ongoing discussion, debate if you prefer, about the effects of extractive industries on streams and their inhabitants. Regulations exist to keep logging and mining and other pursuits from filling streams with debris or silt or chemicals, but it might not take much in a stream to have an effect on fish. That's one of the items in a position paper put out within the last year by AFS, the American Fisheries Society. Two of the authors of that position paper join us now to talk about the impacts of mining and fossil fuel extraction on streams and fish. Dr. Carol Ann Woody is a fisheries and aquatic ecology scientist. Through 25 years of experience, Dr. Woody has focused on salmonids. She lives in Alaska. Dr. Woody, thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. Good to have you. Robert M. Hughes is also a fisheries scientist and professor in senior research at Oregon State University in Corvallis. He was president of the American Fisheries Society in the 2014-15 term. Dr. Hughes, welcome to you.
Good morning.
I want to ask first about your specialty in fish assemblage. I haven't seen that before. What is that?
Oh, we would probably call it a fish community.
Uh-huh.
All the fish in the system. Not just a single species.
Okay, so looking at all the fish together, got it. So, Dr. Woody, if you would, describe the process the Fisheries Society went through to reach a position paper on mining and fossil fuel extraction.
Well, it took quite a bit of work over 4 years, and Bob is really our shining leader. He really helped herd everyone along through many years and many various versions. But, we rallied a lot of very, very smart people with lots of great technical skills and experience to pull together a very succinct technical paper that focuses on basically the impacts of, you know, hard rock mining, which is metal mining, also fossil fuel, and Bob, you can jump in here and help me, fossil fuel extraction, which is coal, oil, and gas, and also aggregate, which is sand and gravel mining. But a number of different experts all kicked in to help us look at the impacts of those different extractive industries and basically kind of hone down on what those were and then pull together, okay, what are those impacts? And then, you know, what did our policy say? Because our policy was outdated. It was in 1995, and it was pretty much focused on coal mining.
Mm-hmm. So this is a broader look at extractive industries?
Yes. And so basically, and Bob has quite a bit more experience in, dealing with a lot of the mining work. I just started in the last 10 years, but Bob has quite a bit more experience in this than I do. So anyway, Bob tapped into quite a few other folks and was able to really pull in a global view even. And Bob, why don't you go ahead and jump in here?
Yeah, we tried to incorporate not just folks from the U.S. and Canada, but which is what the American Fishery Society represents, but also colleagues from Mexico and Brazil. Mexico is also part of the American Fishery Society. And we have members in Brazil, in fact, in 60 different nations. But this was written just by 13 co-authors from 4 different nations.
So is this a much stronger or harder line against mining and drilling than AFS has ever taken before?
It's a more comprehensive approach. I wouldn't say it's harder. It's just we just report the science, what effects mining and fossil fuel extraction have on in-stream aquatic ecosystems, both the system itself, chemically and physically, as well as the biota that live in there, everything from fish to bugs to algae.
And it also, I think it also looks, you know, takes into consideration more the social impact and considering the public more and making sure that people are involved, the affected publics have a decision in there. Also that, you know, there's that minor well development that we're very careful as far as environmental responsibility relative to regulation, treatment, monitoring, and making sure that there's actually money for cleanup and making sure that the environment's protected in the long run in perpetuity. One thing that we're really concerned about as the American Fisheries Society is that we think that mines or drilling in areas that are going to cause perpetual pollution or require perpetual water treatment are probably things that should not be done. I mean, you know, if there's going to be an affected public there, they would have to be the ones that say, well, okay, that's something that people would have to agree to, but that's something that probably shouldn't be done.
So number one on the list, as you pointed out, the public really should be involved in deciding whether a mine or well is the most appropriate use of land and water, is the way the wording works.
Exactly. And that the affected public, the ones that are actually in the area where this is going to go in, should have a say in that. And that doesn't always happen.
All right, much more to talk about. We're talking about mining and drilling versus fish in a position paper from the American Fisheries Society, which is very simply called AFS Position Paper and Policy on Mining and Fossil Fuel Extraction. Carol Ann Woody and Robert M. Hughes are guests on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back and talk with them, and we have several phone calls lined up already. Back to the Jefferson Exchange to talk about fish and streams and mining and extraction in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about extractive industries, particularly mining and drilling for petroleum products, and the effect on streams as reflected in a new position paper from the American Fisheries Society, recent anyway. It's called the AFS Position Paper and Policy on Mining and Fossil Fuel Extraction. Two of the authors join us, Carol Ann Woody from Alaska, Robert M. Hughes from Oregon. He was also the president of the American Fisheries Society a year before last. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about mining and streams, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. And we do have a pretty full bank of phones already. Dave and Gold Beach, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. Dave, go ahead. Dave is going to go back on hold for a minute while we talk to Harvey in Brookings. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, good morning. Yeah, I'm Harvey Young from Brookings, Oregon. I have a fishing business I conduct on the rivers in the region, Smith, Chetco, Hunter, Pistol, Rogue, Illinois. And my question or comment was, I'm really glad that experts like yourself are looking at this and can make this statement, because we're just average people. We need to be educated. And I agree totally that the native fish habitat needs to be protected. And the economic viability of the region is really strong for me as a personal small business owner. And I love the idea that we can, through you and the people who are affected, can put input maybe towards a mineral withdrawal in the future.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Harvey. Appreciate that. I want to draw a line here, though, Robert Hughes, because it seemed like you were making the point that this is not activism. It's just laying out the science.
Whoop. It's saying these are the scientific rationale for considering stronger protections for aquatic ecosystems and the lands they drain. Doesn't mean that we should not have mining. We all use metals every day in our lives. We all use fossil fuels every day in our lives. At least most of us do. But as Carol said earlier, there's certain places where we have valuable fisheries or valuable terrestrial systems that other considerations might have precedent.
Let's take another call. Let's try Greg in Cave Junction. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Bob Hughes and Carol Ann Woody. Greg, you there? Okay, let me let the folks who are listening on radio, when you're waiting on hold on the phone, to stop doing that. You have to turn your radio off, because the radio is actually 10 seconds behind what we're doing here. So if you're waiting on the phone, please listen through the phone, and that's the way we'll make sure that you're on the air when we call for you. So let's go to Mark in Brookings. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for for inviting me on. My name is Mark Sherwood. I live in Brookings, and I've been working for the Native Fish Society down here. And I too just wanted to applaud AFS for putting out this position paper and kind of collecting all the best available science on this issue. Totally agree with Caroline Woody. I mean, there are some places that are just so precious that the public should have the ability to input into the system, deciding what areas of our public lands are protected for fisheries or for clean water resources, and in other places, allowing mining. So I think just the fact that we don't have that opportunity right now. The public doesn't have, and the agencies don't have the authority to really influence where mining occurs. I think this paper is really important because it supports that need to create a process to invite the public into that decision making.
All right, thanks for that, Mark. Appreciate it. So, are we talking about? NEPA does exist, the National Environmental Policy Act. So there have to be environmental impact statements and environmental assessments for certain things. Are we talking about activities that are not subject to NEPA, Carolyn?
Well, there are situations, for example, in some cases on federal lands, for example, on BLM lands and Forest Service lands under the 1872 Mining Act, mining is often given the highest priority, and it's very difficult to say no to mining. And that can often be very challenging for managers, even if there are other uses of the land to say no to. So that is an issue, and people have tried to reform this law. It was something that was established in the when folks used to go out mining with a pickaxe, and it was established to basically settle the West when we were in the expansionist phase. But it's really an outdated law now that's really does need to be revised, and it's something that it is something that is problematic. So, that does. Yeah.
There's an earlier paper that the two of you were part of the authoring team on called The Mining Law of 1872, Changes Overdue, that talks of the primacy of the law. Does it carry greater weight somehow than the Clean Water Act or any other subsequent legislation?
Depends on the agency. Mm-hmm. But just given the history, the past history and relatively recent history, in the U.S. there's an estimated $240 billion needed to clean up abandoned mines. That does not include fossil fuel wells or fossil fuel mines. That's just heavy metal mines. And the cost of that is going to fall on taxpayers. If you've got Superfund sites, you've got like the Animas River spill last summer in Colorado, that's about a half a billion dollars to clean that up. And that's going to be dependent on the taxpayers to pay for that.
Yeah, and I noticed with the Animas River spill, not only does it appear in your paper, but I heard a political activist who favors lesser regulation pointing out that it was the federal workers who actually caused the spill. Technically true, but fair?
Well, not technically true. Actually, it was contractors that were contracted by the EPA, and they were trying to put in a dam, I think, small catch dam for a bigger area that was actually leaking. Through there are three mines there leaking into another one, and it's sort of a mining district rather than a single mine. But trying to clean these things up, they're toxic. It's, water moves in all directions, certainly downhill, but when under pressure, it moves even uphill. So if it contains toxic metals, it's going to be a problem to contain it.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn?
Well, I was just going to say the EPA didn't dig the mine. I mean, the mine was built. It is an old mine. It is before, it's very old. There's over 500,000 abandoned mines in the United States that need cleanup, and there's over 40% of Western headwater streams are polluted from mining. At least that's what we know of. And, there's a lot that need cleanup. So we've got quite a few issues that we have to deal with. And this mining law of 1872 basically, mining companies don't have to provide adequate insurance for cleanup and reclamation, and that's a problem. And that's not really even just the mining law of 1872. I mean, that's a problem even on any other mining claims that are developed. There's still problems with adequate reclamation and insurance for cleanup.
We have another.
Just the cleanup. It doesn't even include hazardous spills like the Animas River spill.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, just to clean up the mine itself and get it all back in order, but not clean the spill up.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, spills happen.
All right. We have a question for Dr. Hughes from Barbara in Grants Pass, who writes, rivers and streams flowing out of southwest Oregon's Kalmiopsis region are some of the cleanest water in the nation and provide pristine habitat for wild populations of salmon and steelhead. She writes about nickel mines now proposed in unprotected areas and says the Forest Service and BLM insist that under the 1872 mining law, they don't have the authority to say no to these mines, even though the proposed nickel strip mines are opposed by the majority of the public. She asks, what is the American Fisheries Society position on giving land managers and the public a say in whether public lands are subject to mining after an environmental analysis?
Well, our position paper is fairly strong on that. It supports public input but from both sides, both the mining side and the anti-mining side, and the use of the best available science, which we think we include in our position paper to help direct those
kinds of strongly issues. Urge the public to read our full position paper, and we can send it to you. And you can look me up on Google, and you can also find me with the Center for Science and Public Participation. So go ahead and contact me, and I can get you the information. But
if I'm looking at the actual paper here, it's not very long at all, is it?
Well, there's a long one. You're looking at the short. You're looking at the abbreviated version.
All right.
Yeah, there's a very long one, but
I don't know what you're looking at.
Well, I thought I had the full text here. It says abstract.
You're looking at the published version, which is just a very short summary, but there's a much longer version that's published online under the policy statements of the American Fisheries Society.
Okay.
We realize most people we know most people have a short attention span, so we tried to give everybody the nutshell, but the long version's on there, which really provides quite a bit more information to people.
Right. I was thinking it was quite succinct. We're talking about the American Fisheries Society's position paper on mining and fossil fuel extraction. Carol Ann Woody and Robert Hughes, both fisheries scientists and members of AFS. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, jx@jeffnet.org by email. Let's see if Dave in Gold Beach is closer to his phone now. Dave, you there?
Yes, I'm on. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, I'm a resident who lives downstream of some proposed nickel mining sites, and I own and operate a paddling and fishing guide business here on the south coast of Oregon. And I'm concerned about the possible impact to my livelihood and my family's health from accidents at these mine sites that you guys are talking about. So my question is, what are some of the typical impacts that the public might see from failures that might happen at these mine sites?
All right, fair question. Thanks for that, Dave.
Well, the big one, I don't know the geology there, but the big one that's one of the most difficult ones to treat is acid rock or acid mine drainage. It's acidification of the water. So the water becomes more acidic, therefore the metals are more toxic, and the acid itself is toxic to fish. You might be far enough downstream that that's diluted, but certainly any salmonids that would attempt to spawn in those headwaters would have difficulty surviving, as would their larvae and eggs. And then, in addition, typically there's a lot of sediment that comes out of mines. If there's a spill, then you get the sediments as well as the toxics.
I mean, most of the mines are, you know, they'll store waste and tailings. And, you know, like Bob said, acid mine drainage is a big problem. But depending on how much waste there is and how they store it, it's, I mean, you know, your big, one of the big issues is, you know, having a tailings dam failure. And that can be a really big problem. You probably heard about the big tailings dam failure in Brazil where, you know, the tailings dam failed, and it went all the way to the sea, like 700 kilometers, which is quite a ways.
It wiped out a city there.
And wiped out a city, killed people, wiped out the whole river. I mean, there's huge problems with these. And, I mean, even though people say they're following these new technological advances, there's They really haven't improved on a lot of these tailings dam designs, and they failed at a pretty high rate. And there's a new paper out by Dr. David Chambers, who's one of our co-authors, and it shows the rate of tailings dam failures, but you know, they're actually increasing. They haven't really improved on the design of those, so it's problematic. And they often dam up existing fish habitat to store tailings in, so, which is also problematic.
Tailings dam is a ticking time bomb.
Mm-hmm. And the tailings are the stuff that they're actually not using. They've dug the stuff out of the ground, but it's tossed aside because it's not the main point of why they were digging in the first place, right?
It is. It's low grade. So there's, you know, they basically, so when you mine, you basically take rock, and then whatever has the highest amount of the ore that you're after, you crush that up, and then you apply chemicals, and then you get out the metals. And then the stuff that's lower grade, and then the waste that's all crushed goes in these tailings ponds, and then the ore that's or the rock that's sort of crushed goes in these big tailings piles. Mm-hmm. And both the tailings pond, the sand, and the chemicals are in the tailings pond, and then the big piles of rock that were not processed, those can be problematic sources of pollution long term. I mean, really what a mine is really a waste management project. And it's generally a long-term waste management project. And they're quite problematic.
Disturbing the earth is going to create some issues all the time. I remember hearing about the groundwater in Wisconsin when I lived there, that, you know, mines that were left abandoned. And it happens in Oregon as well, come to think of it, that you get the water leaching into rock that was not previously exposed, and that water then becomes toxic.
Exactly. Right. You expose, a lot of the metal mines have sulfide rock. You expose that to air and water, and that's what creates basically sulfuric acid, what's in your car battery. And that runs down the face of the rock, and that can leach metals, and that goes into the water. And that's what's called acid mine drainage, what Bob was talking about. And that can be highly toxic to fish. And one of the things that they've been finding out in Seattle recently is, and in urban areas, is that they were finding that salmon were dying, and they realized that it was runoff from the roads carrying copper from brake pads into the streams. And that actually, just slight increases of copper, like 2 to 10 parts per billion, which is just like a couple drops in a giant swimming pool, can impair a salmon's ability to smell. And that's how they find their way home, identify predators, prey, kin, and mates.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of issues relative to these types of mines that, and salmon are incredibly sensitive. All the salmonids are that exist in the streams and rivers that you all have. So,
just to emphasize what a tailings pond is, essentially it's a stew of finely ground rock, essentially sand and silt, plus the chemicals that we use to remove the metals from the ore, plus some water, and then some very dilute levels of metals.
Uh-huh. So not
just something you want to live below.
No. So, Bob Hughes, give us an idea before we go about how big a deal this is for the AFS to come out with this position paper, because God knows we got enough phone calls from people who are in the fishing industry who are really interested in talking about this.
It's not a great big deal for the American Fishery Society. It's an important one, to a subset of it. Certainly the water quality section was a big part of putting this together, but you know, the American Fishery Society is concerned about all kinds of things, from overfishing to hatcheries to the dams to climate change. But let me put one more point in, and we're talking about mining here, but this document deals with fossil fuel extraction. Probably fracking is something you would not want in your backyard either, and the long-term effects of that, we have no clue about that, except that we suspect that those wells will be leaking methane and chemicals in perpetuity, the same as hard rock mines or coal mines.
All right. We'll close it there with Robert Hughes and Carolyn Woody, both fisheries scientists and members of the American Fisheries Society, which recently came out with the AFS position paper and policy on mining and fossil fuel extraction. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.